Blog Talk Radio.
All the laws and legislation in the world will never heal this world like the loving hearts and arms of mothers and fathers. You know, if every child could drift to sleep feeling wrapped in the love of their family and God's love, this world would be a far more gentle and better place. President Obama promised to begin to slow the rise of the oceans and to heal the planet. My promise is to help you and your family.
Look here. I'm talking about America.
She's here for your country. She's here for your state. She's here for your family. She's your voice against the erosion of your culture. Missouri Grassroots Radio is proud to present your culture vigilante, Miss Lisa Payne Nager. She's here for you.
Welcome to Missouri Grassroots Radio. This is Lisa Payne Nager, and this is your Culture Vigilante Hour. And I just want to say once again, thanks to Dave Court for all the fine work that he does for Missouri Grassroots Radio. That's another great intro that he put together for me. Another of my favorite quotes during the RNC this year. One of the things that I loved about that quote from Romney was, and I'm not a huge Romney fan, but I thought that was a great speech, great part of his speech that he made was addressing the family, because I think most of the problems that we have in this country are due to cultural erosion issues, and it all starts with the family. So I was so glad to hear that he addressed family issues in his speech, and I hope to see him do a lot more of that when he gets elected in November. And I just can't say again, thank Dave enough. Dave does a lot of work for the Missouri Grassroots Radio, and he puts together a lot of these clips for us, and he really just props up the Missouri Grassroots Radio a lot for most of us who can't do as much that as Dave can do. So once again, thanks for Dave and all of his great work, and hopefully he's not here with us tonight, but he'll be with us again next week, and I think he's got some other things going on tonight and great things planned for his show on Monday, and we'll talk about those in just a little bit. If you want to call in tonight, 347-677-1835. If you're listening live and you want to call in and contribute to the conversation tonight, feel free to do that. We're always glad to have live callers call in. I want to remind folks also, we haven't talked about it in a while, but what Missouri Grassroots Coalition is it's a coalition of grassroots organizations from across the state. We think that we can do a better job of holding our government accountable when we speak together as one voice. We want to be in kind of an umbrella organization for everybody. We want you to come here and network with us and network together with the other groups. We don't want to be a governing body. We just want to be a place where everybody can come and network. So if you're listening to us and you're a part of another grassroots organization in Missouri, go to MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, go to the sign-up page and sign up there so that we have one central place where we can go to get information and network when things are happening across the state. We'll be sending out information to you on important issues as they come up, and you can send information to us and let us know what kind of help you need so that we can put the word out statewide to help back you up when you get into a bind or when you have some government overreach in your municipality that you need some extra voice. MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. Go to the sign-up page and join us. Another initiative that we have at Missouri Grassroots Coalition is our Secret Santa. The holidays are quickly approaching, folks, and every year, you're inundated with people asking you for money for charities. Well, Missouri Grassroots Coalition is no different. We're going to ask you to buck up a little bit and help us with a philanthropic project that we've got going. Last year, the Missouri Grassroots Coalition Board went to a couple of different department stores on Christmas Eve and found a couple of accounts that had unpaid layaway charges on Christmas Eve, full of toys, where some families were not going to be able to provide for their kids on Christmas Eve, and we paid those accounts off and notified those families, and they were able to go and pick up their toys and provide, you know, Christmas for their kids and keep the magic of Christmas alive for their kids. And we're going to do that again this year. We'd like to double the number of families that we can help this year. So if you have, you know, a couple of bucks, just a couple of bucks, $3, $5, whatever you can donate, go to MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, go to the Secret Santa tab on our page, and just you can send us a few dollars through PayPal. You can send us a check or a money order, and all of the money that we take in for this project goes directly to the project. There's no salaries here. We're all volunteers at MGC. We have no other overhead other than the radio. All of the money that we collect for the Secret Santa goes to Secret Santa and to help and provide kids to maintain their magic of Christmas and help some families out. It's been a tough year, and it's probably going to be a little bit tougher for some families than others, and we want to be able to at least do our part in a very small way to help some families. So go to that page and donate, and help some families out. Help us help some families out. We have a pretty interesting show. There's been a lot going on in the last week. Rome is burning. Egypt is actually burning. The Middle East is actually burning. Last week we saw the assassination of one of our Libyan ambassador. And since that time, there have been just at last count there were 20 embassies, and it's been a few days since I've looked into it, but at least 20 embassies have been invaded by the Taliban or the Muslim Islamic extremists in the Middle East, and they've actually declared war. As far as I'm concerned, they've declared war on the United States, and it's not getting any better. And we will have Liz Trent with us from spiritofresistance.blogspot.com. She's going to help talk to us a little bit about Islamic doctrine and what all of that mess over there in the Middle East means to us here in America and here in Missouri. And just because I think that this is such an issue, and you've heard me talk about it here before on the Culture Vigilante Hour, people just do not understand, and until everything blows up, and it's blowing up right now, people have not been really paying attention to what all of that really means and translates into, and all of those actions from the Middle East and the Islamic. She's going to help us understand the Islamic doctrine and what all of that means for us. We have a Patriot Group spotlight with us tonight. We're going to have Dave Nall of the Republican Liberty Caucus, and he's going to talk to us about the Republican Liberty Caucus in Missouri and across the country. It's a nationwide effort. And we will have Laura Hausladen talk to us about Audit the Fed. She's got some information, and she's also going to be on Dave's show on Monday night for a longer segment and give a little bit more detail about what this Audit the Fed thing is all about. And I have to admit, I haven't researched it deeply enough, so I'm really glad to have Laura with us tonight to give us some information on that, and we'll follow up with her as time goes by. And we will also have Terry Herring back with us. I pre-recorded an interview with him earlier today. He couldn't be with us tonight, to give us an update on the Save Our Sheriff Department situation in St. Charles County, give us a little bit more detail on the charter that's proposed for the November ballot and just what that means to the folks in St. Charles County. And again, I've said this before, and I think it's very important for people to understand, this issue in St. Charles County is not unique to St. Charles County. From what I've been able to find out from researching it and talking to the officers and the deputies here in St. Charles County, this kind of thing is going on all over the country. They're trying to pick off these sheriff's departments one by one. And basically what this does, folks, is it grows your bureaucracy, it ends up costing you a lot of money, and it takes away a lot of your freedoms to dictate and put in place the people who are going to be running your sheriff's department and your police department. So we're going to stay on top of this issue all the way through November, and we're going to highlight this issue in St. Charles County, because if it can happen in St. Charles County, it'll probably be happening in your county soon. So we're going to keep tabs on that, and we're going to take a real short break and come back with Dave Nall of Republican Liberty Caucus. Okay, we're here again this week with Terry Herring. Terry is the Sorry, wrong button, folks. Let me try again.
This is the Grassroots Minute. A big stink has been made this week from the left and the Obama campaign about talk that Mitt Romney gave at a private fundraiser back in May of this year.
There are 47% of the people who vote for the president no matter what. All right, there are 47% who are with him, who are dependent upon government, who believe that they are victims, who believe that government has a responsibility to care for them, who believe that they're entitled to health care, to food, to housing, to you name it. But that's an entitlement, and the government should give it to them. And they will vote for this president no matter what. And the president starts off with 48, 49, 48. He starts off with a huge number. These are people who pay no income tax.
Yes, Mitt was referring to the nanny state generation who believes everything should be given them in spades and we should have to pay for it. But remember this from 2008?
I won't have to worry about putting gas in my car. I won't have to worry about paying my mortgage. You know, if I help them, don't help me.
Now compare that to what Romney stated about the 47%. I don't know about you, but I'm honored and glad to be part of the 53%. I'm Terry Varner for the Grassroots Minute.
Our well-being at home and our leadership abroad are inextricably linked. Our friends and allies must again be able to trust us. From Israel to Colombia, from Poland to the Philippines, our allies and friends have to know that we will be reliable and consistent and determined. And our foes, can have no reason to doubt our resolve because peace really does come through strength.
Just when you thought it was all over, when you thought it was time to hang it all up, Lisa is back.
That's got to be my favorite quote from the RNC. Somewhere along the line, we lost that peace through strength attitude. I don't know when, I don't know where, but, you know, if we still had the peace through strength Reagan attitude, we wouldn't be dealing with what we're dealing with today. I'm convinced of it. But we're going to get back on track, and we're going to talk to Dave Knopf from Republican Liberty Caucus, and he's going to tell us how the Republican Liberty Caucus is maybe going to get us back on track. Welcome. Thanks for being with us tonight, Dave.
Well, hi, Lisa. It's great to be here.
I really appreciate you being on with us. I know we contacted you last week, and I'm learning a lot about the Republican Liberty Caucus. I'm a member of the Facebook group here in Missouri, but you guys are a busy bunch of folks.
I was surfing your website
today, and you have a lot of things going on there.
We're always doing stuff. We have chapters all over the country, which means that it doesn't rely on just a few people to do things. Every chapter is doing its own things, and we try to spread the word about what they're doing. The national organization mainly exists to provide support to our chapters and to publicize what they do and then to be involved in some national legislative initiatives and things and campaigns and things like that.
So the Republican Liberty Caucus, you guys are not necessarily Republican-based group, but you're true to the Republican Party, but you're a little bit libertarian. Is that right?
Well, we're true to a Republican Party that may have existed some years ago.
Ronald
Reagan, Barry Goldwater, you know, tradition of Republican Party that believes in small government and leaving people alone, which happens to be pretty similar to what libertarians believe, although libertarians sort of came to that from a slightly different route, but we're kind of, you know, libertarian sympathetic. And we don't like the way the party has become a party of, you know, big business and special interests and not really paying attention to what the people in the party, the grassroots, are really interested in, which is getting government off our backs.
Right. So tell me a little bit about how the Republican Liberty Caucus was conceived.
Oh, well, we have a long history. We're actually one of the older groups around that's been involved in the liberty movement. Back in the late 80s, some libertarian-leaning Republicans like Roger McBride and Ron Paul and some others got together and formed a group called the Libertarian Republican Organizing Committee. And they decided that name wasn't catchy enough. So then in 1991, they renamed it the Republican Liberty Caucus. And it started with chapters in Florida and then in Texas and in North Carolina. And since then, it has spread to be presence in 40 states. We've got people elected to office. We have members who are in Congress and in the Senate now. And we've got people in every state legislature pretty much and, you know, running various campaigns and trying to get more people elected. We kind of have the goal right now of getting 20% of the members of Congress and 20% of the members of the Senate to be RLC friendly. People we've endorsed, people who have worked with us in the past. We think that if you can get a block of enough votes in the House and Senate who all believe in the basic liberty principles that we're in favor of, that they will sort of lead the way and others will come over to their position because they see that that's a block they want to be associated with because it can get things done and it has some actual principles and an agenda that is popular.
Okay, and you guys, you do endorse candidates. You will get behind a candidate and you will endorse. Are you 501c4?
No, 501c4s can't do that. We're a 527.
Okay.
Which is like a PAC, but we're not a PAC. There are two kinds of 527s. They're PACs, which can spend money, and then they're non-PACs, which can engage in partisan political activism, which is what we do.
Okay.
And speaking of endorsing candidates, you want me to go into a little bit about what's going on in Missouri?
Sure.
Our Missouri chapter is headed up by Tom Martz, who lives in Springfield. And we've endorsed, at this point, I think only three federal-level candidates in Missouri. Well, two federal candidates and a governor candidate, and we didn't do terribly well right off the bat. We had Jason Green, who was running for Congress, and we had Bill Randles, who was running for governor.
Right.
Both of them. But they both lost in the primary. But Robin Hamlin, who's running in the district around St. Louis,
mm-hmm.
She has made it through, and she's in the general election. But it's a very tough district that she's running in.
She's running against Clay.
Yeah, and he's terrible. Doesn't show up to vote, and,
yeah.
You know, it doesn't do a very good job representing his district. But the district is kind of in the bag. The Democrats, it's been, you know, gerrymandered in such a way that a Republican has very little chance of winning there. But Robin's doing a very good job with her campaign. And we hope that she'll, you know, if she doesn't win, at least make a very strong showing and maybe go on to better things down the road because she's not going to give up.
Okay. Well, tell me about some of the issues, because I was surfing on your website. We're going to be talking about Audit the Fed a little bit later on, and
right.
You guys are very involved with Audit the Fed.
Right. We're heavily involved with Audit the Fed. We've been working on it, you know, with Rand Paul since the very beginning. I'm with Ron Paul in the House. And we did a lot of activism to get people to call into their senators and their congressmen. And we're doing more of that right now to try to get it out of the committee and onto the floor of the Senate. It's a very tough situation because in this case, the bill is in committee. And the Democrats control the committees in the Senate, and they don't want to let it get to a vote. There's one Democrat sponsor, and all the other 31 sponsors are Republicans, and the Democrats just don't want to let it go anywhere, if only because it's a Republican bill. If it were a more bipartisan bill, they might be willing to go along with it. But the Democrats have a certain invested interest in what the Fed has been doing, which is providing a blank check to Congress to spend all the money it wants on these programs and bailouts that Obama has been engaging in. And
right. That,
you know, there are many reasons to audit the Fed. Some people want to audit it because they don't trust it. Some people want to audit it because they think the foreign banks control it. But for me, the main reason to audit the Fed and to try to get it under control is that it's just basically providing an endless fund of money for bad government expansions.
Okay, I have to admit, I'm not as up on Audit the Fed as I should be, but aspects about Audit the Fed, it's supposed to be completely independent from the government. I understand that. That's a good thing. Okay. How does this legislation do that without, you know, kind of that slippery slope, that little creeping,
It wasn't really intended to be completely autonomous. The intention with the creation of the Federal Reserve was that it would represent the interests of banks, but also act on behalf of the government to a certain extent. And what's happened is that the interests of the banks, the interests of the government, have traveled very far away from the interests of the average consumer and the working class people in the country.
Right.
So, the government wants the banks to provide them with endless credit. The banks want the government to give them cover for doing that and to basically back up the credit with the strength and, you know, faith of the government, guaranteeing whatever they're doing with credit. And the result is the Fed has been allowed to run pretty much out of control because there's been no one there to apply a firm hand to regulate it and make sure it does what it's supposed to do. I don't have a lot of confidence that Congress is really going to be up to doing that job. But auditing the Fed and having it, you know, at least having its books opened and what it's doing fully disclosed will hopefully encourage people to take more of an interest in what's going on and urge their congressmen to take responsibility for controlling the Federal Reserve or even putting some new parameters on how it's supposed to operate. The problem is if you get rid of the Federal Reserve completely, then control over the money supply goes into the hands of Congress, and right now Congress is not reliable enough to trust with control over the money supply, because Congress has been going to the Fed and asking them for more money over and over and over.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you give Congress control, they'll just write themselves blank checks.
Yeah,
so
and they're good at that.
Right, there's no solution to the problem that's right in front of us, except maybe something like going to a gold-based money supply or some entirely different way of handling the money supply, getting rid of a lot of the sort of manipulable credit that we have right now. That kind of solution is going to be very, very hard to implement. But what you want to do right now is just make people aware. The audit of the Fed to a large extent is an educational effort more than anything else, to make people aware of what the Fed does and how it's doing it, and make people want to speak up to stop it from issuing endless credit. You know, we had quantitative easing. I don't know if you've heard what that is.
Yeah.
That's when they issue more and more money, more and more credit. But what they've just done with QE3 is basically say, we will issue $40 billion a month forever, and just keep inflating the money supply without any kind of limits at all.
Okay. Sounds very promising. I'm really looking forward to Romney getting in there and putting the brakes on some of this stuff. It's
well,
just
not,
scary
I'm
as hell.
Not confident. The problem is that we're not confident that Romney will put the brakes on the Fed. Romney has said that he'll support audit the Fed, but he hasn't made it a major issue of his campaign. I think he could probably score some points if he did. But, you know, if you have somebody coming on later to talk about audit the Fed, we're also working on a lot of other issues. One of the things we've done a lot with in the past are civil rights issues having to do with privacy rights, things like SOPA and PIPA, which were the attempts to bring Internet under more control of the government, try to
right.
You know, reduce people's rights on the Internet, and basically make it so that the government could seize your computer and your data without warrants, shut down Internet service providers and stuff like that. SOPA and PIPA, because of the educational campaigns that went on, were shut down. Now we have another act that's going on right now called the Computer Privacy Act, which does a lot of the same things, but it's not as bad. And we created a situation, along with other groups that worked on this, where legislators were sensitive to how concerned people are about Internet rights. And that's very, very important. The Democrats who want to tax the Internet, want to tax all commerce that goes on the Internet, who want to do things like tax your email.
Mm-hmm.
And those kind of ventures into the Internet would be devastating for the economy and terrible for individual consumers and for small businesses. And we really want to make sure that kind of thing doesn't
happen. Yeah, communication would be shut down. That would be horrible.
Yeah. And then, of course, another one we worked on was the NDAA. We were not successful there.
Okay. Are you there?
You on it?
Oh, are you cutting out on me? Dave? Nope, I think we lost him. We're going to try to get Dave back. If we can't get Dave back, we will go to rlc.org to learn more about the Republican Liberty Caucus. Yet we lost Dave. I think we had a dropped call there. Republican Liberty Caucus, rlc.org. Go there. You can find the Missouri chapter under the chapters page. And Tom Martz is running the Missouri chapter. We know Tom Martz very well. He's a friend of the Culture Vigilante. He helps us with the Yankee Doodle legislation alerts very often here. We appreciate Dave being on with us. We'll talk to him again very soon. Thank you so much, Dave. And we're going to take a small break, another quick break, and we're going to come back with Liz Trent, and she's going to help us sort out what's going on in the Middle East. Here at Missouri Grassroots Coalition, it's Christmas in July and August and September. Last year on Christmas Eve, MGC paid off the department store layaway accounts of two Missouri families who were not able to provide Christmas for their children. This year, we would like to at least double that number, and in an attempt to do that by the holiday season, we're asking you to consider donating a few dollars toward that effort. We know the holiday season is the most difficult time of year to ask for donations, so we're planning ahead and asking you to give whatever you can so that a few Missouri families will be able to celebrate at Christmas. Go to MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org and look for the Secret Santa page. All the details are there for you to donate by PayPal, check, or money order. Conservatives have proven to be the most generous and most benevolent people in the United States. Please help us with this very small charitable project. Santa Claus is coming to town.
His life so dear, for peace so sweet, as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery. Forbid it, Almighty God. I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty or give me death.
We're back. This is Missouri Grassroots Radio. This is Lisa Payne Nager, and this is your Culture Vigilante Hour. We lost Dave Nall, but we do have him back. We want to wrap up with him and find out how we can get you folks involved with the Republican Liberty Caucus abroad and here in Missouri. Dave, thank you. Thank you for coming back. Can you wrap it up for us and tell us how
we're going to... Sorry about that. Every once in a while, my cell tower decides that it wants me to go away.
Well, it's the government.
What's worse than the government is AT&T. which may be a wholly owned subsidiary of the government. It's hard to tell sometimes.
Yeah, they may be one and the same.
Anyway, I probably talked enough. You got other guests coming on. Let me just direct people to our website.
Sure.
The RLC's website is www.rlc.org. And if you go there, there's a section under chapters for the RLC of Missouri. There's contact information there for our local officers, and they can tell you about activities that are going on in your area. And I know we have a presence both in the eastern and western parts of Missouri because the two parts of the state I know are rather different.
Mm-hmm.
And so reach out to them, and I think you'll find there's some good folks there who believe in individual liberty and small government. And they probably would love to have more people join up with them and help them get involved in changing politics in Missouri where, you know, there's a history
right.
of some pretty bad stuff that's gone on there.
Yeah, we do have our share of corruption, no doubt. Thank you, Dave. We really appreciate you being on with us. Thanks for coming back, and we hope to be able to help you grow your organization here abroad and in Missouri for sure. Thanks for being on.
Well, thanks a lot, and good luck.
Thank you. Have a good evening.
Thank you. Bye.
Okay, we're going to go straight to Liz because Liz has been on hold, and Liz has a lot of really good information to help us sort out things with the Middle East and give us some information on the Islamic doctrine that we all need to understand much better. Hi, Liz. Thanks for being with us.
Hi, Lisa. Thank you for inviting me.
We appreciate you holding on for a while. And, okay, you and I have had conversations all week long, and you've been sending me videos, and I've been watching these videos, and I feel like my head is going to explode. And it just, you know, I don't know how people... You know, if you start paying attention to this, if you haven't been paying attention to it and you're paying attention to it now, it's the scariest damn thing on the planet. I mean, this is just, we're hanging by a thread here. And part of the problem is we don't really understand fully what's going on. So you are here tonight, Liz, to help guide us through what the Islamic doctrine is all about, what all of these things mean in the Middle East, what's going on there, the symbolism behind what they're doing, and what that means to us at home.
Okay. Well, number one, Lisa, it's very, very important that we all control our fear. You know, the devil thrives on fear, and terrorism works. And this is why we're having so many problems understanding this in our culture, is because people are afraid of two things. They're afraid of facing the facts about Islam and finding out the truth and realizing that they really have to step up and do something, or they're afraid of being called an Islamophobe or a bigot or something like that. And, you know, when we look at what's going on, it seems overwhelming. It seems confusing. It really is not confusing. If you just bear with me, I'm going to try to give your listeners an understanding of it in a very brief amount of time. What we have going on, and I explained this in your last show, is a war of deception. The main weapon of the enemy is deception. And one of the main tactics, I think I said this last time too, is a war tactic is to divide, divide and conquer.
Mm-hmm.
And so what we have two versions of Islam. We have official Islam, and we have the real Islam. So I'm going to tell your listeners that Islam is a trilogy, and it's made up of three books. It's the Sirah, the Hadith, and the Quran, okay? And what we're talking about are the traditions of Muhammad, the life of Muhammad, everything that Muhammad said and did is what is allowable for Muslims to do. And I'm going to read you one line out of this book on page 751. This is The Reliance of the Traveler. This is a book in English. It's an Islamic law book. You can purchase it on Amazon. And this book has been... certified by Egypt, by universities, by the Muslim Brotherhood, by Libya, by Saudi Arabia. So this is the actual law, as we all know that Islam is not just a religion, it's also a political system, and it's a military system. And on page 751, it says, whoever speaks of the book of Allah from his own opinion is in error. So what we need, Lisa, is we need people to stop giving opinions about what Islam is, and we need to start looking at the facts about what Islam is. And the facts are in the books, and we do have to get them. We have to get the Quran, and we have to get the Sirah, the life of Muhammad. And we have to read it ourselves because, you know, you don't ever want to outsource your information. You know, when you're talking about being a Christian, you don't ask somebody else to tell you what the Bible says. You know, in our culture, we get the Bible out and we read it ourselves. And that's exactly what people need to understand about Islam.
And you were telling me earlier, Liz, that a lot of the Muslims, because they're uneducated, they have not read the Quran themselves. They outsource their information. They have been told what the Quran says. They're not as educated on it as they should be. They're going on what they're told.
That's an excellent point, because Islam is a tyrannical political system, and an imam is actually not a pastor or a rabbi or a priest. He's a jurist. And if the Muslim has problems at home and he wants to find out what will the Quran say, what does Islamic law say to help him resolve his issue, he goes straight to the imam. The imam will tell the Muslim what to do. They don't have to think for themselves. It's the kind of culture that would be exactly opposite of a Western free civilization, where we think for ourselves, where we train our children to think for themselves and to make those decisions. You don't do that in Islam. You just simply do what you're told. And a large majority of these populations do not read, and they don't, and a lot of them will pray Arabic prayers, and they don't know what the prayers say, and they're just simply going through the motions. That's really important to point out. So
most of them, are they being told to go out and do these riots and you know, raid these embassies, and, you know, do they know what they're doing?
Absolutely. 100%. These Muslims were told by their imams, you know, probably the Friday Juma prayers, go out and do this on September 11th. Absolutely. This was a coordinated attack. This was a pre-planned attack. Many of your listeners may or may not know that on September 11th, 1683, this was the last day of the Crusades, which was to boot the Islamists out of Europe. And this was called the Battle of Vienna. So September 11th is a very significant date. They're very symbolic people. They use symbols. This was pre-planned, no doubt about it. And they were told to do it. It has nothing to do with the movie.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's what we're hearing. The movie is just an excuse. So, you know, there's been a lot of stuff in the news the last couple of days about the negotiations to release the blind sheikh back to the Middle East. What will that mean if they release him? I mean, he was the mastermind behind the 9/11 attacks here 11 years ago. He's serving a life sentence in prison for that. But what if the Obama administration releases him and sends him back to the Middle East? What kind of message does that send?
Well, first of all, it sends a message to the American people that your president is a traitor. That he is not protecting the American people, that his foreign policy is a nightmare. Secondly, it sends a message to the Muslim world that we are weak, that we are submitting to Islamic law, that we are submitting to Islam and Sharia, and it's devastating. I quite frankly can't even believe it's happening.
So really, Ronald Reagan had it right, peace through strength. I mean, if you want to maintain world peace, America has to be the strongest superpower in the world to keep everybody in check. As far as Islamic doctrine goes, that's what they respect. That's what they understand.
Absolutely. And I think anybody who's ever been a parent and has a small child, you know, understands that, you know, when you're lenient, the kid will take advantage of you in every way they can. And, you know, it's absolutely true. We simply have to remain strong, and you can see what's happened since this week president's been in office. We've had nothing but an increase in terrorism since he's taken office.
Right. Okay, today, World News reported Egypt issues arrest warrants for Terry Jones, Coptic Christians over anti-Islam video. So have you heard about that?
Yes.
So,
and that's very important. We have an administration who has tremendous ties to the Muslim Brotherhood. We have a State Department head, Hillary Clinton, who has an assistant named Huma Aberdeen, who was head of the Muslim Student Association. Her parents were big Muslim Brotherhood leaders. She has very strong ties to Muslim Brotherhood, and it's very scary to think that there are signs here that the Muslim Brotherhood may actually believe that they could rule the world, the global caliphate. The golden age of Islam would be the goal, certainly is the goal of the Muslim Brotherhood, because they follow the doctrine of Islam. And the goal is always to replace every government with Sharia law, Islamic law.
Yeah, it's a little arrogant. And again, war has been pretty much declared on this country, but I'm just going to read the first paragraph from this World News report. Egyptian authorities on Tuesday ordered the arrest of 7 Egyptian Coptic Christians and a U.S. pastor for alleged involvement in the production of an anti-Islam video tied to protests across the Middle East and North Africa, the BBC reported. And, to me, who are they to be issuing arrest warrants for Americans on our sovereign soil?
Well, part of the doctrine of Islam certainly states that Islamic law is God's law and that all other law is man-made, and therefore their law is the perfect law and simply must replace everything else. We have the OIC, which is the Organization of Islamic Conference, who has repeatedly made strong attempts to stop free speech in the West, in the United States especially. I want to remind you of the blasphemy laws under Islamic law, which basically says you cannot say or do anything that which does not benefit a Muslim. And so that basically means they would really like us to follow their law, Islamic Sharia law, which would say that these men can't make a movie anywhere in the world. It basically saying we're no longer a sovereign nation, that they would have the right to come in and arrest an American for free speech. And I'm going to tell you, that's really scary. Americans need to wake up to that.
Well, let's talk about the free speech issue just a little bit more, because, that's really at the heart of what is the most dangerous thing to the Islamic doctrine, is it not? It's all about control, and, free speech just undermines all of that.
Well, George Washington said, without free speech, if the free speech be taken away from the people, like sheep to the slaughter, we'll be led. And, I think they knew, and I think we know, it's the most important thing. If we were unable to speak to each other, if I couldn't come on the radio and tell you about Islamic doctrine and tell you there's two different kinds, if we couldn't talk about it, we wouldn't be a people. This is called the thought police. At this point, they're controlling our minds. And once they control the minds, I don't know how we get out of it at that point, because after that, they can take away the guns, and then, we wouldn't be our own country anymore.
So how do the Islams view Americans who are trying to become educated on Islamic law?
They don't like us.
But yeah, they obviously don't like us. Would they see that as a threat to their mission?
Yeah, absolutely. We're called names of bigots, Islamophobes, all those kinds of names. And I went to St. Louis University, and I need to bring this up. It's important. And Ingrid Mattson was there, and she was a former head of ISNA, which is a Muslim Brotherhood front group. And she actually wrote this speech for Barack Obama's Cairo speech. And there's a law in Islam. It's called the law of abrogation. It's a regular law. And it says that the peaceful verses earlier in the Quran have now been canceled out. It's the law of abrogation, and the verses, the last thing Muhammad said was, kill the infidel wherever you find him. Kill the kafir, the non-believer, the non-Muslim. And so that verse stands, and the peaceful verses are abrogated. And I got up and I said, the law of abrogation has canceled that peaceful verse she's talking about, where there's no compulsion in religion, and when Islam rules, you'll certainly be allowed to be a Christian. And I said, excuse me, that's been abrogated. And she went all the way to calling me a hater and saying that I was committing a hate crime. And, and all I was doing was quoting their own law. And so it's very threatening. The truth is, when one knows the truth about Muhammad, one would never choose to become a Muslim. And so it's important that we tell the truth.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so Liz, how can people become more informed about Islam besides going to spiritofresistance.blogspot.com? Where else can people get some information on and become educated?
I think it's really important that everybody goes to Act for America and joins Act for America. I think it's .org. And then also politicalislam.com is a fantastic website where they have all kinds of very inexpensive educational materials written by Dr. Bill Warner, and he's really good at that. And then I would also encourage people to get involved in the local area. And let me please tell your audience one more thing before I go, and that is
sure.
St. Louis University is hosting a hate group this weekend. The hate group is called End the Occupation. One of the leaders is a man named Josh Rudner, and on my blog on September 11th, I put, or maybe it was the day before, I put a blog about this, and I put his video there. And he's just ranting and raging about Israel. They hate Israel. And, you know, quite frankly, I think the guy needs some medication. But, you know, SLU canceled a visit from David Horowitz.
Mm-hmm.
And I find it incredible because they promised to have inclusion, and they claim they're letting End the Occupation come because of free speech. Well, then why would they cancel David Horowitz? I mean, he's not promoting hate and the destruction of another country, of another Western democracy. So if everyone would just go read that on my blog, and then possibly we had a phone surge on September 11th, call SLU and ask the university if they would give us an explanation as to why they're allowing this hate group. You know, lies and propaganda, last time I checked, that wasn't included under free speech.
Right, and you would think our institutions of higher learning would, you know, at least if they're going to allow the hate group, they should at least allow the other side to present its position, because that's, you know, there's no critical thinking in that at all, just presenting one side of the issue. Thank you, Liz. We really appreciate you being on with us. I want to have you back. We've got a lot of great information. Go to spiritofresistance.blogspot.com and look at those videos. Liz has got, she's just a wealth of information on this. And go to those places and start reading the Quran. There are very excellent translations of the Quran to get. For people just need to know this information. Thanks, Liz. We appreciate it. Thanks for being with us.
Okay. Thank you. Bye, Lisa.
Talk to you soon. Okay. We're going to take another quick break, and then we're going to talk to Laura Hausladen about Audit the Fed, and we will be right back.
Hey, free market capitalist Missouri business owners. Show Missouri and the rest of the country what hardworking, successful entrepreneurship looks like by advertising your business on Missouri Grassroots Radio. Get your message out to liberty-loving citizens who want to support liberty-loving capitalists. Target this unique and widespread market with your business's unique and valuable products and services. Contact us at info@MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org for details.
The government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from the earth.
Welcome back. This is Lisa Payne Nager, and you're listening to Missouri Grassroots Radio. This is your Culture Vigilante Hour. We've had a busy, packed hour so far. We're not done yet. We've had a little bit of a discussion about Audit the Fed with Dave Nall of Republican Liberty Caucus. They're very involved in that issue, and it's an issue that I knew a little bit about. I've been kind of hovering on the periphery with it a little bit, not real familiar with it, but, you know, obviously familiar enough to know that it's a problem, and, you know, the Fed has obviously ruined our economy at this point. But we have Laura Hausladen with us. She has information on some events that are going to be taking place and some information on the issue itself. Thanks for being with us today, Laura. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Lisa, for having me on. Should I start with the information about the events, or?
Well, let's talk a little bit about what we know about Audit the Fed. I don't know if you heard Dave Nall's interview and all of the information that he gave us about Audit the Fed and what an issue it is. It's you and I talked just very briefly this afternoon. One of the things that I was always worried about with Audit the Fed was that it was an issue, because I know that there are state-by-state initiatives to attack this at the federal level, where states are introducing legislation to so that they can, you know, push push the House and the Senate into doing something on this issue. And my worry always was, because I watch legislation and there's so much legislation that we already have already that's just not being addressed by the legislators, and it's not being enforced, I guess is the word that I want to use. And I asked you today if you knew of anything along those lines. You know, is there legislation? Are there regulations? Is there anything in the Constitution about the Federal Reserve that we're just ignoring and has allowed the Federal Reserve to run amok, or is this just something that they're allowed to do under the Constitution?
Oh, well, according to the Constitution, the Federal Reserve would be totally unconstitutional because we're just supposed to have money that's coined, you know, that's gold and silver. So the Federal Reserve, you know, went into effect in 1913 with the Federal Reserve Act. And the history is really pretty fascinating because the Federal Reserve was set up pretty much kind of secretly. The laws were drafted by the big bankers, and they did it for the big bankers. And frankly, it's been wildly successful, but that success has come at the expense of the, you know, average American, because our dollar, I didn't get a chance to hear what Dave said earlier, but our it takes now, we've had the Federal Reserve for 100 years, and it now takes approximately 100 times as many dollars to buy what a dollar would buy in 1913. So we've lost about 97% of the value of our dollar. As far as legislation, it really doesn't matter what, I don't think, what our state legislators do. I mean, they can say, we want the Federal Reserve to be audited, but that's pretty much up to Congress to do that. The only thing we can do statewide is things like Paul Kertman tried to do last session with creating a sound money bill and actually giving, you know, working out something so that there is a competing currency or something going on. But I'm sure he would be good to have talk about that. But I can give you some. The reason the bill passed, there's, you know, of course, it passed the House, and that was H.R. 459. That passed in July. And I listened to some of that debate at that time, and a lot of the pushback there, which was incorrect pushback, I thought, was that there's the Federal Reserve is already being audited, and this is semi-true, but you have to be careful because the transparency of the Fed really requires an analysis of this part of the statute with code of the U.S., which is 31 U.S.C. 714, and that section of the U.S. code establishes that the Federal Reserve may be audited by the GAO, that's the Government Accountability Office, but it simultaneously severely restricts what the GAO may audit. So the GAO is not allowed to audit it's not allowed to audit transactions for with foreign central banks, governments of a foreign country, or non-private international financing organizations. And this is huge because there was a partial audit that, due to the pushback during the 111th Congress, that, you know, which took place right after all those emergency funds were put out there. There was a partial audit of those emergency bailout funds. And we found through that trillions of dollars were, you know, like they're going overseas to foreign banks to bail them out. So there are some really big holes in what can be audited, and that is why this is extremely important. And right now it is very timely to get involved because, like I said, it passed in July, the House, with big bipartisan support. All the Republicans, I think, except for one, voted for it. and all but 92, I believe, of the Democrats voted for it. So it had very strong support, and almost immediately Harry Reid said he would not allow it to come to the floor of the Senate. So that's where we're sitting right now, is that it needs to get passed through the Senate. Right now it has 32 co-sponsors, and it got its first Democrat co-sponsor, I think, in the last days, and it was not Claire McCaskill.
Yeah, big surprise there.
So we really need to call her and get on the ball. When I called the office recently, they said, well, they were waiting for it to come out of committee before they decided what they would do. And, you know, that's not satisfactory. They all have to be pushing against Harry Reid and co-sponsoring it, because if it gets to 60 co-sponsors, you know, then he's pretty much, you know, it's pretty much passed. So,
yeah, not much you can do about that. Well, that's good. Okay. So what is it that you need folks to do here, Laura? We need them to call the senators. How does Roy Blunt stand on this issue?
Roy Blunt has co-sponsored.
Okay.
So, you know, we're feeling pretty confident with him, although it never hurts to say, you know, we're here, we're watching.
Yeah, give him that support. He needs to keep it rolling.
Yes, exactly. And of course, if he's really, now that he's, you know, getting into leadership, there's no reason why he can't be pushing like crazy for this and, you know, showing that it's really important to him. But there's two other people that can be called right now. One is Harry Reid, and I've got that number if people want
Go
to
ahead.
Take that down. That's 202-224-3542.
Okay.
That's 202-224-3542. And, of course, Harry Reid, we all know who he is and
yeah.
why we need him on board. And then the Senator Tim Johnson is the chair of the Banking Committee, where the bill is languishing right now.
Okay.
He's a Democrat from South Dakota. His number is 202-224-5842. So that's
okay, very good.
And I imagine everybody has Claire McCaskill on speed dial, but in case not, it's 202-224-6154. And then the other thing you can do is get out this weekend to one of the Audit the Fed rallies. These are going to be nationwide this weekend. And, you know, they're Audit/End the Fed rallies. And the St. Louis one is very exciting because Representative Paul Kirtman will be speaking, Cynthia Davis will be speaking, and, of course, she's running for lieutenant governor.
Right.
And Robin Hamlin, who is running for
Congress in the first.
Right. She'll be speaking, and there are a few other folks as well. But this will be from 12 to 3 at the St. Louis Federal Reserve Bank. You can find information on Facebook, but that's right downtown pretty much. It's 1 Federal Reserve Bank Plaza, Broadway, and Locust Streets is where it is.
Okay.
And it's just north of, the old courthouse area. So, and then the one in Kansas City will be at the Fed there, and that's also at noon. And those will be, you know, just good ways to go and show your support for this. I'm sure they'll be, you know, watching.
Okay. You mentioned there was a Facebook page. Do you have a Facebook page that we can go to?
Yes. If you go to, let's see. This one that I have, if you go to, that's just a long number. I can't really give that. What's this one called? Nationwide End the Fed Event.
Okay.
Let us coin together, they're calling it. And there's also a St. Louis End the Fed rally Facebook page.
All right, very good. Okay, let me give you those numbers again for Harry Reid, 202-224-3542, Tim Johnson, 202-224-5842, and Claire, 202-224-6154. four, and go to those Facebook pages. One more time with those Facebook pages, Laura.
Nationwide and the Fed event, and okay. Then the other one is St. Louis and the Fed.
All right.
Okay.
All right, very good. And Laura is going to be on with Dave and the Hour of Truth on Monday to give us more information on this issue and to talk about further events and hopefully updates on contacting our senators. Right, Laura?
Definitely. And there's so much information on, you know, why we should audit the Fed and what the problems with the Federal Reserve. So maybe I can talk more about that on Monday.
Excellent. Yeah, get us involved and engaged and educated on that issue, and I'll certainly be tuning in because there's a lot I need to learn about that. Thank you, Laura, for being with us. I really appreciate it, and we'll have you on again, and we'll also talk to you again on Monday with Dave.
Okay, thanks so much, Lisa.
Thanks, Laura. Have a good evening.
Thanks. You too. Bye.
Okay, we're going to take one more real quick break here, and then we are going to go talk about the Save Our Sheriff situation in St. Charles County.
This is the Grassroots Minute. In April 2009, undercover individuals from the Springfield Greene County Health Department purchased raw milk from Amon and Teddy Bockert of Conway, Missouri, in the parking lot of Springfield store. The Bockerts sell a variety of pasture-raised products, including raw milk, direct to consumers. Missouri law allows for the sale and delivery of raw milk by unlicensed farmers to a customer's residence. The Missouri Milk Board charged that undercover purchases were made at a central distribution point and violated the law. The Missouri Attorney General filed suit to stop the Bockerts from selling in such a manner, and the Greene County District Attorney brought criminal charges against the couple for selling milk at premises off the farm. After almost two long years, the Bockerts were acquitted of the Greene County charges in January of 2011. A settlement in the Milk Board case was reached on July 31st of this year, in which they will be allowed to sell and deliver milk to known customers at their homes, at their farm, or at a central distribution point, such as a parking lot. However, a consent judgment signed by a judge enjoins the Bockerts from selling milk to strangers who have not previously arranged for the sale and purchase of raw milk. In other words, they cannot sell to just anyone who walks up to their stand at a central distribution point like a parking lot. Other Missouri small dairy farms like Morningland Dairy at Mountain View have been forced by the FDA and Missouri officials to destroy and recall their raw milk cheese products as well. These are prime examples of out-of-control, power-hungry bureaucrats who are making every effort to deny us the right to choose what we feed our families and to destroy the small family farms in this state and country. These battles are not just about cheese and milk. It's about freedom granted to us by our founding fathers and our Constitution, not being controlled by bureaucratic would-be gods. Taking back our rights and stopping bureaucrats like this is what the grassroots movement is all about. I'm Terry Varner for the Grassroots Minute.
I've got a feeling that the night is turning.
Is life so dear, or peace so sweet, as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery? Forbid it, Almighty God! I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty, or give me death.
This is Lisa Payne Nager, and you're listening to Missouri Grassroots Radio. This is your Culture Vigilante Hour, and we're wrapping it up for the evening. We've got one more segment. I did want to tell you, last night I had the pleasure of attending the Women Standing with Todd Akin event at a Pillar in the Valley in Chesterfield, Missouri. I'm telling you, the place was packed, and the enthusiasm for Todd Akin is not waning. I mean, it's just growing as time goes by, and I see the momentum just gaining, and those poll numbers are coming up, and people are getting behind them, and everybody I talk to, and not just, I mean, I run in pretty conservative circles, but, you know, when I even go outside of those conservative circles and talk to the average independent voters, you know, they all get it about what's going on here and the power grab and the attempt at the Republican Party bosses and the Republican establishment to squash Todd Akin and his bid for the Senate, because Todd Akin is kind of a rogue conservative and they don't want any more rogue conservatives in Washington, D.C. chipping away at their power structure. So I really enjoyed that event last night. I have a story up at examiner.com about that, and I'll have a slideshow with some photographs from that from the event of last night, and I'll be posting that up at MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org also later on this evening. If you get a chance to go there, take a look. And we're going to wind up the evening. We have been covering, talk about power grabs. St. Charles County is a hotbed for power grabs, and right now the county executive and the sheriff, the current sheriff, are trying to introduce an initiative to for the voters to vote on in November to change from an elected sheriff's department to an appointed St. Charles County Police Department run by a police chief appointed by the county executive. So we've been following this story from its inception. It was introduced very quickly last month, and it's been rammed through the St. Charles County Council, very lickety-split. They're not taking the time to do studies on it. They're not doing cost analysis on it. They're not doing anything. They're going to give it to the voters. And there's been a drive by the St. Charles County deputies. They do not want this initiative, and they've come forward and initiated a campaign to try to educate the voters on what's going on. So every week I'm going to have some information for you here about what's going on in the charter and some information on how to get involved in the campaign. And here's my interview with Terry Herring from today. Okay, we're here again this week with Terry Herring. Terry is the spokesman speaking out for the Save Our Sheriff's Department issue in St. Charles County. And this week we're going to go over a couple of key points that are being introduced in the charter. Thanks for being with us today, Terry.
Hi, it's good to be with you again, Lisa. And I do want to make the point that I am the project officer on this for the Missouri Patriots Forum.
Very good. And you're speaking out on behalf of the people that are running the Save Our Sheriff's campaign because we don't want to put any of these sheriffs at risk, have their careers be at risk for fighting this issue. And there are a great many, the majority of the sheriff's departments is opposed to this ballot initiative, right, Terry?
Well, it's not only the members of the sheriff's department, but it's also members of a number of the other local police forces in the county.
The municipal police forces within the county are
there are members of the municipal police forces in the county who are also opposed to this.
And why would they be opposed to it?
Well, it is basically redundant. They have capability in their areas, and the question really begs if this proposed chief of police of St. Charles County is the chief law enforcement officer of the county, then the question becomes, are the other municipal police operations subordinate to the county chief of police?
So this is another instance where government overreach could be rearing its ugly head into the municipal police departments. So the county police chief could be disqualifying the power in the municipal police departments across St. Charles County.
Well, it raises questions. I won't say
it could
specifically, but I mean, what is the role of the chief law enforcement officer of the county versus the municipalities? And
that's not addressed in the charter.
Proposed charter amendment, the proposed St. Charles County police operation would only have jurisdiction for the unincorporated areas of the county. Well, for most of those, it's rolling hills and farmland.
Right.
Yes.
Okay.
But when you have a designation of chief law enforcement officer of the county, it just raises questions of what is the actual intent.
Okay. Well, a couple of the fine points that we want to hit on this charter so that we can educate the folks in St. Charles County and surrounding counties, because you really need to understand that there's a trend going on across the country to pick off these local sheriff's departments and to take power away. And if it happens in St. Charles County, your county could be next. So one of the issues that we want to address, Terry, was the issue of the responsibility. If we initiate a police charter, if we initiate a chief of police and a county police, what is that going to do to
the surrounding counties, or I mean, it's just the surrounding municipalities, and we talked a little bit about that. But you sent me an email today from a concerned citizen, and what was in that email that, that brought up the next question for you?
Well, let me turn to the email.
It had to do with costs.
Well, the issue is this.
And paying for the paying for the services that we may not be getting.
Well, if the establishment of the county police function takes place, then what basically is left to the sheriff department? Let me read this from the charter. And this is in section 4.1303.1, and the new wording would be, from and after January 1, 2015, the sheriff shall possess and exercise only those powers and duties now or hereafter given to the office of sheriff for a county of the first class by applicable law, blah, 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 related to the provision of services necessary for the operation of the courts for which the county is responsible, including but not limited to prisoner transport, civil process, bailiffs, court services, and security and manners relating to jurors. So we would have a sheriff, we would have a reduced staff in the county sheriff's department, and their authority would be limited to those areas pertaining to court operation and support. The remaining functions would be transferred to the new county police department, which would only have jurisdiction over the unincorporated areas of the county. So what we would imagine then would be a proportionate shifting in operational funds from the current budget of the sheriff's department to the new police department of the county. And that would indicate that the residents of the county would now be paying for the police department of the county. And yet, if you're living in incorporated areas such as O'Fallon, St. Peter, St. Charles, et cetera, you're going to be paying for services you no longer receive.
Right.
And you would be paying for a sheriff or a chief law enforcement officer of the county over which you have essentially no input on selection or termination. What would happen is you're essentially losing your vote. You are having, as we might say, taxation without representation.
And it's a government service that some people are not going to receive, but they're still paying taxes to make
That's
it happen.
Correct. Yes, ma'am.
Okay. So, again, you know, here we go. You know, it's more taxes, and in addition to that, we're still paying a sheriff's department to do those other odd jobs that have been taken. So,
and nothing has been shown as to what the operating cost of this new department is going to be.
There's been no cost analysis to date.
No,
we talked about that last week. And they're trying to, I mean, this has been rammed through really quickly, folks, without any cost analysis or any in-depth study or any input from the community, which always raises a red flag. When government moves that fast on an issue, you know that there's something up.
Well, call that shock and awe,
right?
To use a military term. The again, the two purported reasons for this are A, that an election every 4 years for sheriff is disruptive to the operation of the sheriff's department, which seems a rather weak argument, since we have all but one of the counties in the state of Missouri, St. Louis County being accepted, has the sheriff and has elections every 4 years, and they don't seem to be terribly disrupted. The second is that we need to upgrade the standards of the chief law enforcement officer of the county, and to that end, we have section 4.250.2.3, which reads as follows. Well, this is under qualifications. You shall have a degree from an accredited four-year institution of higher learning and have completed one of the following: the Federal Bureau of Investigation National Academy Program, the Northwestern School of Staff and Command, the Southern Police Institute, or a similar program of at least 8 weeks' duration awarding a certificate of graduation. Now, the following sentence is particularly interesting. Commensurate experience may substitute for the requirement of this section. So everything that went before that last paragraph can be wiped out if the individual has, quote unquote, whatever is determined to be commensurate experience. Well, we have had sheriffs who have had commensurate experience and have performed well and have been responsive to the vote of the citizens of the county. So what have we really changed? I see very little.
Okay, so that raises a curious question, because in my mind, didn't I see on a video somewhere where the sheriff introduced the reasoning for one of his main reasonings for introducing this situation was that he felt that it was very important to have qualified people in this position. The qualifications were really an important issue in bringing this forward.
Sure.
So
let me read his words in defense of his position. This was from an email that he sent to me. You indicate you understand the reason for having an appointed police chief is to eliminate the disruption within the sheriff's department during election years and for a period of a time after the elections. This is one major reason. The primary reason is to ensure future chief law enforcement officers of the third largest county in the state will be qualified law enforcement professionals selected by a resume, qualifications, and experience. If this process is approved, it will automatically eliminate the turmoil pitting deputy against deputy, et cetera, during election years and the months following. And then we turn to: our residents deserve the assurance the chief law enforcement officer of this county has the qualifications, experience, and training to manage the largest law enforcement agency in the county for patrol, investigative, emergency management, crime lab, forensics, bomb disposal, SWAT, airborne law enforcement, and other enforcement actions. And then I will read to you again the last sentence of section 4.250.2.3, commensurate experience may substitute for the requirements of this section.
Okay.
So
tell me.
Trying to find out what we really have achieved here, other than creating another stovepipe operation that removes from the voters the authority to select their chief law enforcement officer. We have essentially in one sentence said experience substitutes for all of the above, but we've never defined what commensurate experience is. So we're really back to where we were before.
Okay.
Why make the change?
Absolutely. Too many unanswered questions, and I have seen nothing coming out of the sheriff's department or the county council through the media to kind of justify, you know, why we need to go there. I do know that that some of the people that are opposing this issue, a lot of the people that are opposing this issue, have put together a campaign. They have a website, saveoursheriffdepartment.com,
yes,
where you can go and learn about the issues and learn about the charter and all the various aspects of the charter, learn how to become active and engaged in fighting this issue in St. Charles County. And they also have a Facebook page, Support Your Sheriff's Department, St. Charles County, Missouri. And again, there's more information there. Terry, do you know anything else about what we can do to help this initiative along so that we can fight this?
Well, I would just, visit these sites. I would talk to neighbors about it. Right now, it's still rather low on the radar. But what I would demand, and I would ring the phones off the hook at the county council. Everybody's got at least one council representative, one council member, and say, what are we buying here? We do not need a repeat of, we have to pass this so you'll know what's in it.
Absolutely.
This is nonsense. You're asking us to spend money, and we don't know what we're getting for it, and the probability is that we'll get less than what we have now.
Absolutely. Terry, can we get the SOS campaign to put that contact information on their website and on their Facebook page?
Which contact?
For the county council?
Members?
Yep.
It's right on, it's right on the county website as it is.
Okay.
All you have to do is pop that up. Maybe what we could do next time, I don't have it immediately available, is I'll give the names of the county council members and their phone numbers.
Right.
We
want to make that easily available, so if we could put that on the website, that would be great.
We'll see what we can do about it.
Okay, very good. Anything else that we need to know, Terry? We really want people to get active and engaged. There will be yard signs very soon before the campaign, and we want to get there's an action center on the website for people to go to give their information so that they can get information from the campaign for things that they can do to get signs and make phone calls and do those kinds of things, right?
Absolutely correct.
Okay, very good. We'll have you back next week, Terry, to give us an update on the progress of the campaign and any other issues that come up. Thanks for being with us today.
My pleasure.
Okay, great.
Okay, folks, let me just give you the website and the Facebook page. Support your Sheriff's Department, St. Charles County, Missouri. Now, I understand they have had bumper stickers made, so you can put a bumper sticker on your car to start advertising this campaign and talking to your neighbors about it. And the website is saveoursheriffdepartment.com, and there's all kinds of information there about that you can educate yourself on the situation, on the charter, how the ballot language reads, how you can get email updates and get involved. There's an action center, and another thing, I mean, we haven't talked about this very much, but these are the county, the sheriff's deputies that have initiated this campaign. They need money. If you want to be able to fight this, you have to have money to have signs and flyers and things like that. So if you have a couple of bucks, there's a donate button that you can easily donate a few bucks, give them some cash, help them to fight this situation, and that will be greatly appreciated. Everybody needs to watch this. Needs to watch what's going on in St. Charles County, because if it happens here and if it's successful here, it may be coming to a county near you. It may be coming to your county. So that about wraps it up. We've gone a little bit long this evening, but we've had a lot of stuff going on. I want to tell you, Laura Hausladen will be on Dave's show, Hour of Truth, on Monday to talk a little bit more about the audit the Fed. So we want to make sure that we get up on that issue. Mondays, Dave is always with you, Mr. Hour of Truth. Tuesday nights, we don't typically have a show. Due to scheduling issues, and Wednesday nights I'll be here at 7:00 every week, your Culture Vigilante Hour. And Thursday nights we have Kevin Harned, the Hillbilly Logic. He's joined our Missouri Grassroots Radio team, and he's with us at 7:00 on Thursday nights. And on Fridays, Missouri Grassroots Roundtable. And that's always a good show for everybody. So tune in then. And until then, folks, we will talk to you next week. Make sure you go to the Missouri Grassroots Coalition website and give a little bit of money to the Secret Santa page and sign up and join it and become a member while you're there. And until then, we'll talk to you again next week. Thanks for being with us.